Today is September 15th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com or phone 206-202-0647. Don't be shy. Go ahead and definitely feel free to leave your message on that phone number, and we will get you on the show.
That's right. Don't be shy. Brian's not.
I am not. Actually, I'm seldom shy. So you had a good time in Chicago there, Jeff?
I did. Graph Expo is always an interesting show to go to because it's such a different dynamic from Macworld. And there's a lot of neat products to see. And if you're into the whole printing thing, there's some crazy big machines to see. But, you know, the one thing that really stuck out at the conference for me was the number of iPhones that I saw. I mean, everywhere that I went, people had an iPhone in their hand, on their belt, around their neck, whatever. There were tons of iPhones.
Around their neck?
Yeah, someone had like a... You know when you go to a lot of the conferences, you can get the fancy badge holders that hang around your neck and they have like a little pocket in the back? There was a guy that had one in one of those.
I found that it's extra helpful to have my iPhone around my neck in case I need to have quick access. You know, for me, when I hear the word Chicago, I think of this really bad movie that I can't remember, but I also think of the Violent Femmes song where... He insists that while he is from Chicago, he ain't no Al Capone.
You know, that's absolutely fantastic. What an absolutely wonderful music reference.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I guess we should pretty much get to the news, shall we?
Yeah, whatever. As long as we're both here, why not?
Why not?
The FCC is auctioning off radio frequencies, and Apple may make a bid. Logic Studio and Logic Pro 8 were released. Apple rolled out a few updates, and a programmer uncovered a clue to Apple's plans for movie rentals. In the iPhone world, the British cell carrier O2 may have landed a deal with Apple. Apple hit the million milestone with the iPhone ahead of schedule, and the promised $100 iPhone credit finally materialized.
The FCC is going to be conducting an auction on January 16th, 2008 to sell off rights to the radio spectrum currently used for analog TV broadcasts. And the interesting news is that Apple may be considering throwing its hat into the ring. Business Week cited two unnamed sources claiming that Apple is interested in the 700 megahertz spectrum, which could be used to create wireless networks that are faster, more reliable, and more robust than the fastest Wi-Fi networks available today. The FCC will open the bidding at $4.6 billion U.S. and expects the winning bid to be somewhere in the $9 billion range. Apple has more than $14 billion to spend, making the top bid not something that's out of the question. The auction is already the subject of interest for Google, TiVo, various telephone and cable companies, and other communications companies.
And while Business Week claims Apple may make a bid, Forbes thinks that's not going to happen. It appears that even though the Cupertino company has been investigating what's involved in participating in the auction, the profit margins would be too small to make it worthwhile. Instead, if Apple has plans for use of the airwaves being auctioned, it seems more likely the company would team up with whomever does win some of the spectrum to offer wireless media and data services for iTunes, the Mac platform, iPhone, and iPod.
Apple has released a major update to Logic, the company's professional digital music recording solution in the form of Logic Studio. Logic Studio includes a new version of Logic, Logic Pro 8, complete with a new interface, Soundtrack Pro, a package of 40 software instruments called Studio Instruments, Studio Effects, which has 80 effects plugins, Studio Sound Library, and a new live performance tool called Mainstage that offers control surface integration and display information aimed at live performances. Logic Studio was built around Logic Pro 8, a major upgrade to the product line. Apple has introduced a new single window interface. That's an interface with the update that brings total control of Logic into one place. New features include snapped transient selection, quick swipe comping, and dynamic channel strip creation. And I'll be honest, folks, I've used Logic and I've used GarageBand. I don't know what some of that stuff is. And it also has a host of control surface integration improvements. Logic Studio is priced at $499, and Logic Pro 7 users can upgrade for $199. Customers who purchased Logic Pro 8 on or after August 1st, 2007, that's actually customers who purchased Logic Pro 7, will be eligible for a free upgrade to Logic Studio.
And Apple released software updates this week for QuickTime, the new aluminum keyboard, and the iMac. The update for QuickTime 7.2 improved compatibility with the iLife 08 suite, which includes iPhoto, iMovie, iDVD, and iWeb. Keyboard software update 1.2 is intended for users of Apple's new ultra-thin aluminum keyboard, and it should make it easier for users to take advantage of the keyboard's special features like quick-access media buttons. And Apple also released a new software update for the 20-inch and 24-inch glossy display iMac. iMac software update 1.1 includes bug fixes, but Apple isn't providing any additional information about what that update does. All of these updates are free and available through Apple's software update application.
More fuel was added to the rumor mill fire that Apple is planning to launch a movie rental service through the iTunes store when Mac shareware developer David Watanabe found a movie rental option in the iTunes, quote-unquote, report a problem process. He found mixed into a pull-down list of reasons for the problem you were reporting a category called movie rental. It has since been removed, and Apple has still not announced plans for offering a movie rental service.
And Apple is hosting a special media event at its London Regent Street store on Tuesday, September 18th. The event will be held at 10 a.m. London time or 5 a.m. Eastern time. And the invitation includes the teaser, Mum is No Longer the Word, according to Mac Format. While the teaser is most likely a hint about what Apple will announce at the event, it doesn't offer anything specific. Speculation has already begun that Apple is announcing the UK carrier for the iPhone, or that the iTunes store will begin offering the Beatles music library for download. Now keep in mind that even though the press conference is at an Apple store, it's by invitation only, so don't bother showing up without your invitation in hand.
And who's the lucky winner of the UK iPhone contract? British mobile phone service provider O2 has reportedly agreed to a revenue-sharing deal with Apple on Wednesday as part of an alleged agreement to carry the iPhone. O2 competitor Vodafone was involved in negotiations with Apple as well, but apparently pulled out of the process because it was unwilling to agree to a revenue-sharing deal. O2 CEO Peter Erskine, however, chose to continue negotiating because he felt revenue-sharing would be advantageous for his company. He said, quote, if sharing revenue brings a bigger pie to the table, then we'll be happy to share that pie. The revenue sharing model will play an increasingly important role in the future of converged communications, unquote.
Apple sold its 1 millionth iPhone on Sunday, September 9th, beating the company's stated goal of doing so by the end of the month. All told, the million seller mark took 74 days and took place after the company announced a $200 price drop on the 8-gigabyte unit and dropped the 4-gigabyte model from its inventory. When announced, Mr. Jobs said that the point of the price drop was to make the device, quote, affordable for even more customers, end quote, which is actually corporate speak for wanting to make gains in market share. Some had suggested that iPhone demand could have been on the wane earlier than Apple had originally anticipated, but even if that was the case, Apple's new price point has clearly found a sweet spot in the market.
Apple unveiled the details of the promised $100 credit for early iPhone buyers on Friday. Eligible iPhone owners can take advantage of an Apple Store credit that is valid at Apple's online store and retail locations. Credit was offered for iPhone purchases made before August 22nd, and owners can apply for their credit by completing an online request form at the Apple website. Once finished, Apple will send an SMS message to the owner's iPhone with an access code that could be used to redeem the credit. And I lost my place. Credit requests must be submitted before November 30th, 2007, and the iPhone must be activated before completing the credit form. Additional information is available at the iPhone credit page on Apple's website. And it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. So what's on your mind today, Jeff?
I was thinking we should banter a bit about this FCC auction thing that's coming up and how it fits into Apple's master plan.
We can do that. You know, when you say banter a bit, it evokes imagery of William Shatner as James Kirk in the lake with Miramani going, Miramani, spush, spush. Miramani, spush,
spush. You know what? That was just creepy.
Thanks. That's it's a marvelous piece of 60s bad editing and William Shatner overacting all combined into one. So let's get into the FCC auction. Will they or won't they?
My gut feeling is that Apple will not get into the auction because they have their newfound way of making these strategic alliances. They'll let someone else shell out the cash, go through all the trouble to get the spectrum and get stuff set up, and then they'll piggyback in on what these other people have already done.
Yeah, well, keep in mind that part of the FCC rules for the auction is that the winner has to make the spectrum available to other users as well. That rule was put into place at the heavy lobbying of Google and some other various, you know, entrepreneurs and folks with money who kind of wanted to make sure that it was going to be a little bit open to multiple parties. So, you know, I forget who it was, and I apologize for not being able to give the proper attribution, but someone pointed out that the profit margins, at least as we know them, on existing business models for wireless networks are so small that Apple is not likely to be able to make enough profit off of, say, $9, $10, $11 billion bid in order to justify spending that much of their resources, so many of their resources on this kind of platform. I think that's probably one of the most compelling reasons for why Apple wouldn't do it. I do think that they're far more likely to work with another company like, say, Google.
You know, one thing that a lot of people are probably trying to figure out right now is why in the world would Apple consider bidding on these radio waves anyhow? And what it comes down to is the frequencies that are going to be available are going to be very conducive to fast and robust data networks. So Apple could have a far more robust wireless iTunes store online, and they could also set up things that make it much easier to network at a distance your computers, your iPhone, and your iPod. So there's some reasons why Apple would want to get into this, but yeah, I think that they'll do it by teaming up with someone that already shelled out the cash.
Yep. You know, it's not just, I think the initial reaction for everybody, of course, is they would basically go into business for themselves in terms of being their own wireless carrier for the iPhone. That's certainly a possibility, but there are many other potential applications for these radio waves. I think that there are all kinds of things that could be done for, you know, .Mac services or iTunes services or, you know, something dealing with centralized computing. There are all kinds of things that they could do with it. But, you know, I think that another big problem with this is that this is only for the U.S., so
right.
Whatever Apple does here, they're not going to be able to do in the rest of the world, where those, you know, where these particular radio frequencies aren't going up for auction right now in the various respective countries. So I don't know. I'm sure that Apple looked into it. I'm sure that Apple's not going to actually be a part of the process unless they are partnered with other companies. I don't even think they'll go that far. I think that they'll work with the winners after the fact.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what will happen. So my money's with you on this one, Brian.
Sweet. FCC auction down, London media event. iPhone. Next.
Yeah, iPhone next. And Beatles, not.
I don't know. You know, I've had a great track record of making myself looking like an idiot predicting the impending Apple or Beatles announcement at every single one of the last three or four media events that I've been to, because there's been so much Beatle paraphernalia involved in either the pre-show or during Jobs' presentations, and I've been wrong every time. So I'm going to say no Beatles on this event, and I hope that this will be the fifth time's the trick.
You know, if you're predicting consistently the same thing, eventually you'll hit the one media event where it happens.
That's true. It's like in poker. If you make enough bad calls, one of them's bound to look genius.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so but this time I'm going to say no Beatles and hope that I'm wrong again.
Okay, well, I can't wait to see if you're right or wrong.
That's true. iPhone sales, what do you think? Did it take the price cut to goose sales?
I don't think it did. I think that the iPhone was going to hit the million mark in September, regardless of the price drop. If I use Graph Expo as an example of this, the number of iPhones at that event, where you have a lot of straight-laced suit and tie people running around that typically are not your early adopter type for technology, and all these people are running around with iPhones, I mean, that to me says a lot about how well the product is selling.
Wrong. Wrong. Wait, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. You know, Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and have to disagree with you on this. I do think that Apple probably would have hit that million mark close. I actually agree with you. I'm just kind of being my usual jerky self. What I really mean to say is that I think that the price drop certainly goosed sales. I think a bunch of people went and got iPhones probably the moment that the price dropped. Matter of fact, I know folks that went and got iPhones. And, you know, not that like my friends or my acquaintances are somehow a representative sample of the entire U.S., but surely it goosed sales. I think they would have hit it anyway. The fact that they did hit it only 74 days out, I think, is pretty impressive.
It is. And, you know, the fact that you flipped around what you were saying and you're agreeing with me, you totally took the wind out of the sails for my reply, which was going to be, but Brian, what about your track record predicting when the Beatles announcement will happen?
Yeah, but I'm right with everything else.
Okay, well, there is that.
I mean, you know, it's a gift and a curse.
It is. It truly is.
I jest, of course. I'm not really jesting. I do tend to be right, but I don't think I've relayed this anecdote in this particular show. At least I hope not. But I once had a girlfriend ask me why I had to be right all the time, and I said, "Do you mean why do I insist on being right, or why am I actually right all the time?" And she said, "Why are you actually right all the time?" It's like, "What do you want me to be wrong?" It was a really weird conversation. I love you, Joanna. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, we all love you, Joanna, whoever you are.
Actually, she's a great girl. She's still a friend of mine, and she's fantastic. Just poking a little bit of fun. So let's actually move on to another topic of discussion that has been near and dear to my heart lately, which is Windows.
Yeah, you know, there's so many weird things going on with Windows. What an easy target, and what a blanket statement to cover all of it.
It sucks.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've just been sitting back marveling at lately has been this whole thing about the Windows updates that are getting pushed through to people's computers, even though they may have set the Windows software update thing to not do any updates.
Yeah, that's just beyond whacked. That is a mistake of Microsoftian proportions.
What a wonderful way to describe that. But yeah, I mean, the first time I heard that, I sat back thinking, no, I'm misunderstanding what these people are saying. And then I realized, no, I must be misunderstanding Microsoft's logic, because I don't get that. I mean, if you go in and choose the option that says, do not update the software on my computer. And then certain things still get updated. That's just wrong. Well, yeah, I guess just, what Microsoft needs crazy. To do is either stop it, or they need to change that so it says, check this if you want to have the feeling that you have control over what's being updated on your computer.
Well, you know, it's an even bigger problem that they're not actually telling you what those updates are. I mean, that's just completely crazy. And, you know, this is three things. First of all, Microsoft is damned if they do and damned if they don't.
True.
They are going to be hammered for Windows being a piece of crap operating system that's buggy and has lots of security holes, and they're going to be hammered for actually forcing updates to try to make it less buggy and full of security holes. So that's two things. The third thing is that this is really a reflection of the fact that Bill Gates thinks that he still owns the software that you purchased. You know, Microsoft, that you know, they want us renting their software, and they, you know, it's they never want us feeling like we actually own it, because they have a really warped perspective in those terms, in this area. So I think this is merely a reflection of their attitude in the first place.
Yeah, you know, I think it also shows that Microsoft, or at least a section of people at Microsoft, are under the impression that when you install their software onto your computer, they now have the right to come into your computer anytime they want. Now, whether or not they're gathering any other information or putting other things on your computer without your knowledge is beside the point. This is the impression that's being made,
and that's a bad thing. It's similar to the Windows activation, where they can turn it off. Why people put up with this stuff is beyond me. I happen to be one of those people that happens to put up with this stuff. I've been using Windows a lot lately. I played a lot of poker on Windows, on some of the Windows-only poker sites out there for years. But in the past several months, I've actually been playing Lord of the Rings Online, which is a Windows-only massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And just recently, I've been playing a Masters of Orion clone called Galactic Civilizations 2. And, you know, I've been in Windows quite a bit. It's just such a bad operating system.
It's sucky.
It's sucky. It's crappy. You know, it's not even good enough. One of the cases I've made for Windows software being, generally speaking, inferior to most of the Mac options, you know, like in any given category, you're going to have, say, you know, 1 to 3 options in the Mac platform, and 1 to 3 of them will be really good. And in the Windows platform, you're going to have maybe 5 to 11 options for the same category in software. And 1 or 2 of them might actually be good. The rest are going to be crap, because, you know, there's this whole mindset in the Windows world about something being good enough. And that's really all folks care about, that at least. And that's my honest impression for most Windows users. They don't really care. It's good enough. But Windows isn't even good enough. I've experienced so many crashes on a machine that is relatively clean, that gets almost nothing downloaded on it. This is on my MacBook Pro using Boot Camp. And you know, I'm sure that there's no doubt that there's... I am completely open to the notion that I am responsible for some of this, and perhaps because I'm not a big Windows head, in fact, that I have done something that has caused this. But it's just bad software, and it's a bad operating system.
You know, Brian, I'm sure that for every Windows user out there, there's something that they're doing that's causing a problem on their own computer. However, if you look at the number of people that are like really, really smart and they can recite to you where, you know, DLL files sit and what they do and
how,
you know, they just
works.
Yeah, they have all this crazy info packed in their head and they're so smart with Windows, and these people are still having problems where they can't figure out what's wrong with their computer. That's a real problem with an operating system.
Yeah, that's what I think. It honestly baffles me that people put up with it. It just baffles me. I know that there's folks that have to do it because the software that they have only comes on Windows. I know that there's other people who actually like Windows. And it just baffles me. It's a crappy operating system. It's inelegant. It does not get out of your way. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite of the Mac platform, which for years has tried to get out of your way, especially once Steve Jobs came back to the company. You know, he wanted to make software that allowed us to do insanely great things his way, but with the operating system getting out of our way.
And I'm all for the operating system being out of my way.
I am too. And Windows is just not like that. It's constantly in the way. I hate it. Hate it. Hate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Windows sucks.
Shall we move on?
I think that sounds like a great idea.
All right. I'll quit whining about Windows now. Let's hit that riff.
Well, that particular riff means it's time for the request line, which is a segment where we talk about the topics that you pick. And we'll start with Aaron Theis. He wrote in asking, I heard more rumors of iTunes movie rentals this week. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. And he added, I may not be in the majority, but while I want to own my music, I want to rent my movies. If iTunes provides movie rentals, they will definitely get a larger portion of my check and will likely push me to purchase an Apple TV.
You know what? When I read that, when it came in, that line, while I want to own my music, I want to rent my movies, was just a very, very, very compelling point, and I think that it's I think that there's a lot of people that probably agree with that. So I'm excited to talk about this.
You know, I find movie rentals to be a very compelling thing. I mean, it's something that we've been doing since VHS and Beta. Yes, I remember Betamax since those days. And, of course, now with DVDs. And, honestly, the primary reason
Did they have color TV back then?
Well, they did. But what we did was we took these pieces of color acetate and put them on there. So, yeah.
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 Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Okay. So, for me, a compelling reason to buy a movie as opposed to rent it, I have two. The first one is, if I'm having really bad luck at the movie rental place, which I often do, it's typically, in the long run, easier on me just to go buy a movie, watch it, and then sell it on Craigslist or give it away or hold on to it. The other reason is because it's a movie that I really, really like and I'm going to watch again, so I want to have my own copy. But otherwise, renting just for me is a much better option.
Well, yeah, you know, and again, I think that it's going to resonate with a lot of people. While I'm still baffled that Apple is using 720p instead of 1080p dot whatever. I forget all the various acronyms and abbreviations. I think that the company could do really well with a movie rental section, and I imagine that they are working on it. I don't think it was any accident that it was in that pull-down list, and I do think it was an accident that we saw it, but you know, I'm sure that it was there because they're working on this behind the scenes, and my guess is that Apple will eventually offer such a service.
You know, Aaron had another comment that I found very interesting, and it's when he said that if Apple had a movie rental service, that would be something that would help push him into buying an Apple TV. Mm-hmm. And I could totally see where an Apple TV, especially if one of the interface options allows you to go to the iTunes store and rent and download a movie directly from the box and not have to use a computer to do it, that would be a very cool thing. And that would make Apple TV a far more compelling product.
It would. It would very much so, as a matter of fact. You know, I'm not a fan of pay-per-view in that it – The quality that you get from pay-per-view is so bad that I mean, I'm just not interested in it. And I would definitely rent 1080p movies if I could.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, means that the Apple TV would have to be upgraded to support 1080p, and I don't see that happening soon.
Well, you know, for everyone that's willing to accept the 720p, then that's a great option to be able to sit on your couch and say, hey, let's watch Blades of Glory or whatever. Download the movie and you're just sitting there on your couch watching it. That, to me, that's a very compelling sales pitch. But yep. even if it's a different movie than Blades of Glory, it'd still be a very compelling sales pitch.
Indeed. Well, let's move on to Rick Burleson's comment, who wrote in to ask about iPod Classic battery replacement. And he said, and I quote, "Has anyone heard if the battery in the new iPod Classic is user replaceable? I am still using my second generation iPod, in which I replaced the battery myself. I was wondering if the new iPods were the same or if there would be another class action lawsuit and a chucklehead award appending." Well, if there is a class action lawsuit on this, there will in fact be a chucklehead award doled out by Jeff and I.
Excellent. And to answer the first part of your question, Rick, the batteries are just like in prior iPod models. They are not user replaceable.
Well, no, but they are actually user replaceable. There's been several kits that have been on the market that people can order that include the right tool to open up the iPod and go ahead and replace that battery yourself. There's also, of course, several services like Tech Restore offers a service where they'll replace the battery for you for those who don't really want to open it themselves. So it's sort of user replaceable. It's not officially user replaceable at all. You're supposed to send it into Apple, and they'll replace it for you.
Right. So I guess to clarify my original statement, the iPod, any of the iPod models that you go out to buy do not have a panel that you can easily remove and pop a new battery in yourself like you can with some other electronic products.
There you go. Yeah, so it's definitely not officially user replaceable. There will be, if there are not already, and I apologize for not looking this up before we did the show, but I have no doubt that third-party services will be servicing these particular iPods for replacing the battery cheaper than Apple will do, and I am fairly sure that someone is going to be doing a do-it-yourself replacement kit as well, just like with prior iPods. So go ahead and get one, and you probably are not going to regret it.
I think that's a safe thing to say, especially after going and looking at them the other day myself. I was really impressed with all of the new iPods, and I was expecting to be disappointed with the Nano, and you know, I wasn't. I was actually really impressed. It's one of those
even
products.
Even after all
that,
of my sassy comments about it being ugly?
After all my sassy comments about it being ugly, when I went and saw the Nano in person, played with it, touched it, caressed it, licked it. Okay, no, I didn't actually lick it. But it's only because it was in the store. Other people have been touching it. That would not be sanitary. I was really impressed. I thought it was a really nice iPod. I wouldn't watch movies on it, though. The screen's a little too small for movie watching, in my opinion. But I know for a lot of other people, it'll be just fine. And holy crap, that's a great display on that Nano.
It is a pretty good. It's definitely a nice looking display, and that's interesting that you found that you liked them more in person. Pardon me while I get a frog in my throat, but that is the request line. If there's something you'd like to hear Jeff and me discuss in the Context Machine, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com or call 206-202-0647. And remember, this is Jeff's line, but I'm going to steal it. Succinctness is next to steveliness.
And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. And the bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's us, that is. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. And remember to subscribe to us at iTunes.